Hi, Anton Savage here from News Talk. Now, if you're a parent, you'll know the school question comes up again and again. Where's the right fit? Somewhere that's not just about grades, but where your kids actually enjoy learning and feel part of something. Nord Anglia International School, Dublin. It's actually Ireland's only IB continuum school, so kids can start there at 3 years of age and stay right through to 18 following the International Baccalaureate, which is recognised worldwide. The school is known as a warm, inclusive international community. Kids are encouraged to be curious, to try new things, and to build the confidence that'll carry them through life. So if you're curious, have a look yourself. Head to naisdublin.com. That's naisdublin.com. Now, I hope you enjoy your podcast.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
For it is good to be children sometimes, and never better than at Christmas, when its mighty founder was a child himself. Those are the immortal words of Charles Dickens, a man who's become synonymous with Christmas. And while we take many of our Christmas traditions for granted, Christmas cards, Christmas trees, etc., where and when do they actually originate? Reporter Simon Tierney has been investigating and he joins me now. Morning, Simon.
Morning, Pat.
Now, your research has traced many of our festive mainstays back to one single decade of the 19th century. So, which decade was that?
Well, the 1840s was perhaps the single most important decade in terms of creating what we understand Christmas to be today, Pat. I bought a copy of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol a few weeks ago, and I was determined to read this. I suppose it's a kind of a foundational Christmas text. And while reading it, I began to realise just how influential it was, and indeed the Victorian period in general was, in how we perceive so many of the traditions we continue to mark today.
But A Christmas Carol is 182 years old, so how does it stand up to the passage of time?
Well, honestly, it reads like a blueprint for what our Christmases continue to be like. It's full of details about festive dishes like plum puddings and mulled spirits and the theme of the transformational nature of the Christmas spirit and people collecting for charity, carol singers, you name it. The almost fantastical, snowy and foggy London atmosphere, it's all there in the text. Now, it was published on December the 17th, 1843, and Dickens was desperate for a commercial hit after a major slump in sales with his previous title.
So he releases it just a week before Christmas, and was it a success?
It was huge. It sold out completely by Christmas. And by Christmas Eve, and it had an astonishing further 13 print runs by the following Christmas. And it's never, of course, been out of print since. Now, there's been countless film interpretations of A Christmas Carol over the years, from Bill Murray's brilliant Scrooged in the 80s to Patrick Stewart's very faithful 1999 adaptation. Here is Patrick Stewart's Ebenezer Scrooge attempting to undermine the tropes of Christmas.
A Merry Christmas, Uncle! God save you!
Humbug.
Christmas a humbug, Uncle? You don't mean it.
I do mean it, sir. Merry Christmas. What reason have you to be merry? What right have you to be merry? You're poor.
If I had my way, every idiot who went around with Merry Christmas on his lips would be boiled with his own pudding and buried with a stake of holly through his heart.
Come, Uncle.
Nephew, you keep Christmas in your way. I'll keep it in mine.
But you don't keep it.
Then let me leave it alone, then.
I still say Merry Christmas.
That's all you do say. Much good it does you. Much good it'll ever do you.
I dare say there are many things I've got a lot of good from which haven't made me a penny profit. Christmas amongst them. You see, Uncle, I've always thought of Christmas as a time for good, not a time for profit. A kind, forgiving time. A time when men and women can think of others. I must never put an extra penny in my pocket, but I believe Christmas has done me good and will do me good. So I still say, Merry Christmas, Uncle.
Merry Christmas, Uncle. Not that it was appreciated. That was Patrick Stewart playing Ebenezer Scrooge. The decade we're talking about here, the 1840s, also saw the arrival at Windsor Castle of one of the key architects of the modern Christmas. So who was that?
Yeah, so Queen Victoria married the German Prince Albert in 1840, her first cousin, actually. And Albert brought the Lutheran tradition of Christmas trees with him, playing a massive role, really, Pat, in popularising their inclusion inclusion in the festivities. Now, in December 1848, the Illustrated London News printed an engraving of Victoria and Albert standing next to their Christmas tree in Windsor Castle, the tree sitting on a table, which was the tradition at that time, complete with lighted candles, massive fire hazard, as you can imagine. Now, this single image, Pat, was the Victorian equivalent of going viral. The gentry and subsequently, of course, the rest of society kind of following this new fashion for indoor decorated trees. But it's important to remember that Victoria was the Queen of Ireland, not just England, of course, at that time. So she exerted significant cultural influence here too, whether people liked her or not.
Now, we know Victoria kept extensive diaries. Have you managed to track down her musings on the introduction of this German tradition?
Yeah, so I've been reading through some of her diaries from the 1840s, and it's really quite extraordinary how prominent the Christmas tree is in her writings, Pat. But what struck me is this. Each member of the household got their own tree.
So one for every member of the audience.
One for every member of the audience, exactly. So her diary entry for Christmas Eve, for example, 1845, it says, quote unquote, "At six, Albert took me into the blue closet where, as usual, my frosted tree stood and my presents were all arranged on a table. Dearest Albert had so wonderfully thought out all his gifts. I then took Albert to the little music room where I had arranged my gifts for him, and there was also a tree." So that's two. After this, Mama and the four children received their Bescherung, which is German for gifts, with a tree.
So Christmas trees owned individually within a household, unlike today, where there's only generally the one.
The one, yeah. So I've calculated that there were at least seven Christmas trees in Windsor that year in 1845, one for each member of the family. Now, we have a clip, Pat, from a 2017 episode of the ITV series Victoria, in which Albert is introducing the idea of a Christmas tree to his wife, and he's explaining the Lutheran origins and the symbolism of it all.
Hi. Anton Savage here from News Talk. Now, if you're a parent, you'll know the school question comes up again and again. Where's the right fit? Somewhere that's not just about grades, but where your kids actually enjoy learning and feel part of something. Nord Anglia International School, Dublin. It's actually Ireland's only IB continuum school, so kids can start there at 3 years of age and stay right through to 18 following the International Baccalaureate, which is recognised worldwide. The school is known as a warm, inclusive international community. Kids are encouraged to be curious, to try new things, and to build the confidence that'll carry them through life. So if you're curious, have a look yourself. Head to naisdublin.com. That's naisdublin.com. Now, I hope you enjoy your podcast.
So, there will be a tree for each member of the family, and underneath them there will be an altar. And here, in the center of the room, we shall have the main tree hanging from the ceiling. I shall choose the trees, Herr Pension. As tradition commands, they must be put up on Christmas Eve. Oh, Tannenbaum, oh, Tannenbaum, Petrus in deiner Blätter. Martin Luther is walking through the forest at night. He looks up, he sees the wintry stars sparkling through the branches, and he thinks, I will take a tree. I will place the tree inside my house. Upon it, I will place candles. That way, my children may look upon this tree and imagine the stars above Bethlehem on the night of the Nativity. And this year, Victoria, our children will do the same.
I hope they know how lucky they are to have such a devoted father.
And that was from the ITV show Victoria. To what extent did these traditions make their way across the IRC? Because last week we were talking to Dermot Gavin and he talked about that engraving and how that was replicated in America. They took away the crowns and the royal trappings. But what happened here? Did that engraving also travel across the IRC?
It did, Pat. Those images of the tree, they were circulated among the gentry here in Ireland through the Illustrated London News, which a magazine that did have a substantial readership here in Ireland. Now, One of the earliest mentions I could find of Christmas trees in the Irish press was an ad I came across in the Irish Times archive from December the 19th, 1868. And it's an ad for Graham Lemon and Co. at 49 Sackville Street, which of course is what we call O'Connell Street today. And it reads, "A large variety of fancy ornaments, birds, toys, crystallized fruits, etc. for Christmas trees."
So that ad tells us what people were decorating their trees with at that time.
Exactly. So it's intriguing because it not only tells us that Christmas trees were well established by the 1860s here in Dublin, at least, but also how people were dressing their trees. Crystallized fruits, fancy ornaments. And those are exactly the same things that Victoria mentions in her own diaries, in fact, too. Mm.
I wonder if Graham Lemon and Company was a precursor of Lemon's Pure Sweets, which was a big thing in my childhood.
Lemon's, interesting.
Yeah. Anyway, it's hard to mention Victorian Christmas traditions without mentioning caroling, many of which did feature in Charles Dickens' work.
Yeah, so Dickens' Christmas Carol famously features a little boy regaling Scrooge with some Christmassy songs, much to his annoyance at the beginning of the book, certainly. And he writes, "At the first sound of God bless you, merry gentlemen, may nothing you dismay, Scrooge seized the ruler with such energy of action that the singer fled in terror, leaving the keyhole to the fog and even more congenial frost." But the book is full of references like this, Pat, to caroling, something the Victorians, of course, really popularised. Now, here is George C. Scott's 1984 film interpretation.
Our Saviour Christ and His Lady, O Christmas Day, O Christmas Day. Our Saviour Christ and His Lady, O Christmas Day in the morning.
Clear the road, out of the way, let me through.
The ships all three, O Christmas Day, O Christmas Day. Play with the sail, the ships all three, O Christmas Day in the morning. His reason weak, his hand is strong, and sorrow all his pain. He went to church but once a year, and that was Christmas Day.
And that was from the 1984 film adaptation of A Christmas Carol. Now, Simon, there's one more significant contribution made by that decade, the 1840s, to the creation of the modern Christmas. So what was that?
Yeah, so the Christmas card itself was invented in 1843, Pat. Henry Cole, the founder of the V&A Museum in London, the Victorian Albert, he hit upon the idea when he was looking for, I suppose, an efficient way to send his season's greetings to his many acquaintances. And he had an artist friend by the name of J.C. Horsley, and he got him to do up a beautiful little triptych on a card. It's worth looking up online if your listeners get a chance. And it features a family enjoying a festive feast, and then this is flanked by images of charity on each side.
But this very first Christmas card was not without controversy, I understand.
No, certainly. It caused huge controversy because the image actually features children drinking wine. I showed it to my own children over the weekend, and they noticed, it's one of the first things that they noticed when they looked at it. And I suppose the idea of juvenile drinking was certainly frowned upon. The temperance movement was very strong in Victorian England. But despite this, his creation certainly caught on, perhaps because the penny post had recently been introduced, which made it much more affordable to send correspondence. Now, it featured a to at the top and a from at the bottom for users to fill in the names. And I suppose a sign of the cultural significance of this 1843 invention came in 2001 when one of Henry Cole's original Christmas cards was sold at auction in London for £22,000.
£22,000 for a triptych of a Christmas card. Extraordinary. Anyway, from 1843 to the present day, when Christmas cards are now, sadly, it appears, more in decline than ever. Simon, thank you very much for that report.
Thank you, Pat.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.